It is Friday night, and we sit at our dinner table, my wife, son, and myself. We are holding hands before we eat. Instead of a prayer, we have what we call a thank you circle, where we each share one thing for which we are thankful. It can be anything. We nod to Søren to start, and tonight he says, "I am thankful the world has not ended yet." This is not the first time he is thankful for this, and he does not always say it with a twinkle in his eye. Not every Friday, but when we think to do it, we observe our own kind of Sabbath. We clean our Brooklyn apartment's living/dining room. We prepare a meal, something a 9-year-old will actually eat. Often something we can assemble from our table's lazy Susan. We put on something classical or jazz, and we put away all electronic devices. And we spend time together eating, learning about each other and each other's day. After cleaning up, we play a board game or cards until it is time for Søren to go to bed. Then my wife and I read Music in the Air. We do family. Our tradition comes from my wife's childhood among the Seventh-day Adventists, a Protestant denomination that believes, among other things, in the imminent second coming, hence Advent, of Jesus, prioritizing vegetarianism and godly living, and observing a Friday night Sabbath. They find their roots in the Millerites, a radical movement that expected Jesus' literal return in 1844. The world did not end on that day, which is still known as the Great Disappointment. One of the best names for a religious non-event. My wife is no longer a Christian, but she retains some of the practices that shaped her, and those practices are now part of our family. She values the importance of intentional community, and our family has created something new, each member giving and taking what they need from it. Orthopraxy over orthodoxy. Right action over right belief. Tonight, we find Paul and Timothy up in Macedonia, in northern Greece, in the Roman colony of Philippi, where on the Sabbath, they leave the city limits to pray by the river. They meet a purple seller, Lydia. We recognize Philippi because of Paul and his epistle to the church there. But Philippi was a big deal in its own right. Conquered and renamed by King Philip of Macedon, father of Alexander the Great, it was where, after Caesar's assassination, the army of Brutus and Cassius was defeated by Mark Antony and Octavian, who later became that Caesar Augustus. With the creation of the Roman Empire, Philippi became a kind of retirement town for army vets. Purple is the color of wealth. It's expensive and labor-intensive, crushing enough of those tiny shellfish to make the dye. It's the color of power, imperial Roman power. We call her Lydia because she's from Thyatira in Lydia, a region hundreds of miles east in Western Asia Minor. It's like saying, we call her Brooklyn because she's from Brooklyn. But Lydia is up here in Philippi, selling purple to the rich and making good money. She's a businesswoman. She has a home and a household, possibly with enslaved people whom she has bought. Today, she's resting at the river because there is no synagogue in Philippi. She is praying on the Sabbath, having fellowship with the other women. She hears Paul share the gospel, and soon she and her whole household are baptized, probably in that same river. Lydia opens up her home to Paul and his fellow travelers. She provides a space for them. She creates a space for them to rest. This is the essential Greco-Roman practice of xenia, the deep and consequential guest-host relationship of fellowship. Xenos means stranger. Lydia is welcoming the stranger. I like to imagine Lydia in Philippi with her hands dyed purple. She is marked by her labor, by her trade. She is spattered with the residue of wealth and power. What matters is how she wields it, how she makes life better for others with the resources, with the gifts that she has. Do we judge her faithful? We, you and I, are named for her. St. Lydia's, this place, this space, this community, by the toxic waters of the Gowanus Canal, is a place of rest. We Lydians keep her invitation alive. We welcome the stranger. We worship, have fellowship. We remember Jesus and break bread with one another. We embody a strange paradox. Working together, we create a place of rest. We feed each other. We keep a unique kind of Sabbath, orthopraxy over orthodoxy. You are welcome here, very welcome here. Whoever you are, wherever you are from, whatever you believe, rest. Because life is difficult, and it is difficult in our beloved city that never sleeps, that is terribly expensive, and that can be terribly lonely. Rest. I like to imagine St. Lydia covered in purple tattoos. She is the kind of woman you see at a Coney Island sideshow, in the mermaid parade, in a Greenpoint bar, in a Gowanus church. She is brave and bold and proud of her body and who she is and is becoming. She is transgressive and immodest and unashamed. Her power is in how she serves. She loves to cook and loves a good story. She loves God as she knows how, and she's a little pissed at God too, for good measure. Orthopraxy over orthodoxy. Share in the meal. Lydia, oh Lydia, say, have you met Lydia? Lydia, the tattoo lady. Along her arms flows the Gowanus, where we gather, peace be upon us. Her own iconography is written upon her skin, a broken loaf of bread upon one shoulder, a food-stained halo on the other. Silverware across her, along her clavicle, a recipe's ingredients down her bicep, steaming bowls of something wonderful upon her hands. Thin lit candles span her forearms. A carafe of water, a glass of juice, a pot handle burn on her palm, a knife scar on her finger. A messy kitchen over her heart. A mixing spoon from her hip downward. Her belly proclaims, feed the hungry, save the world. You can learn a lot from St. Lydia. La, la, la. La, la, la. Her entire body shows and tells the stories of everyone who has ever eaten here, and has ever rested here, and whoever will, who worships God, who seeks God, who is angry at God, who doesn't believe in God, who is unsure about God, who is tired of God, who is tired. It is our Sabbath. Rest, because you need it, because we need it. Life will soon be hard again, maybe very hard, maybe very soon. One reason I am part of St. Lydia's is because here I can find of some of my own kind. For whatever reason, St. Lydia's tends to attract people personally invested in the arts. Performers, artists, musicians, writers. Some of us are God haunted. Some of us are God hunters. I am a writer, and I write about God, sad rock music, and subversive ideas. I even steal from a Marx Brothers song for my sermon. I don't fit in easily. And you probably don't either. Creativity requires exhaustive, serious labor. Now, I need a place to rest. At St. Lydia's, here by the river, I find Sabbath. This Lent, we remember, we dwell upon our Sabbath. Here at St. Lydia's, we do Sabbath by setting the table for it and sharing in the meal. Like my apocalypse-minded 9-year-old, I am thankful the world has not yet ended. Until it does, however it does, in my restless wilderness of Lent, here at St. Lydia's, I will find rest. I will do Sabbath as I am able with you. We share the sermon here at St. Lydia's. We'll spend a few moments in silent reflection. Then, when you hear the bell, you're invited to share a story or experience that was sparked by the sermon or the text. And here we share stories rather than opinions or crosstalk because Jesus told stories, and stories help us to know one another better. We begin in silence.